Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 599, titled Update on September 11th and Related Matters. This program is being recorded on June 3rd of the year 2007. Before we get into the main body of the broadcast, once again, let me exhort members of the listening audience to take advantage of the tremendous amount of information that's available online on the Spitfire website and on linked and related websites. Those of you who only listen to the broadcast itself are missing the bulk of the For the Record experience, so to speak. So please go to www.spitfirelist.com and access the tremendous amount of information available there. There's a mini library of old anti-fascist books, links to WFMU's websites that maintain the entire For the Record series available for download for free. There, each program is turned into an article-length description, and there's a tremendous amount of information available as well. Lectures and archive shows available for download for free. Linked website, which features all of the declassified documents proving the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry before, during, and most importantly, after World War II. So please do take advantage of those broadcasts, of that website and the information available, particularly the descriptions of the broadcasts. Speaking of broadcasts, a couple of corrections. In For the Record 588, I misidentified Nick Pope as a former head of the British Ministry of Defense. Nick Pope actually is a British Air Force officer who was in charge of the British Ministry of Defense's investigation into the UFO phenomenon. The headline in the newspaper that I read described him as a former MOD chief. In American journalistic shorthand, a former DOD chief would be former Department of Defense. It would allude to the Secretary of Defense. In this case, however, they were alluding to the head of a bureau within the Ministry of Defense. So that was the point of confusion on my part. Initially, when I first arranged the broadcast, had identified him as simply a British Air Force officer, but then upon reading the headline, I said, oh, wow, he was the MOD chief? No, he was an Air Force officer, head of a bureau within the Ministry of Defense. Another point of confusion was, to a certain extent, fusing that synapse, so to speak, with a fellow named Paul Hellyer, who was, in fact, the Canadian defense chief, the Ministry of Defense of Canada, the head of the Ministry of Defense of Canada. He also was Deputy Prime Minister of Canada under Elliot Trudeau. So, to a certain extent, misreading the headline and also fusing his situation psychologically with that of Paul Hellyer, who was indeed the Canadian defense chief. Another correction, in For the Record 592, the Stephen E. Jones, who's become known in connection with the controlled demolition hypothesis, which we're going to address here in this broadcast, was not the same Stephen E. Jones who is writing a book challenging Darwin. The Stephen E. Jones of controlled demolition fame, I guess one could say, is Stephen with a V. The other Jones is Stephen with a PH. I do not view that as decisive vis-a-vis my criticisms of Stephen E. Jones, formerly of Brigham Young University, a fellow who airs my programs late night on a Southern California station, volunteered the criticism that criticizing someone's fundamental religious views, or fundamentalist religious views, I should say, does not negate their scientific expertise. In general, that's an assessment that I would agree with. However, when those fundamentalist religious views color one's empirical process and empirical analysis, then indeed it is relevant. It's unfortunate that the photographs accompanying Stephen E. Jones's essay, Behold My Hands, in which he examines pre-Columbian Central American artifacts, in particular statuary and artwork, and sees in those physical evidence of Jesus' resurrection and having visited the New World as described in the Book of Mormon. That is an indication of the corruption of analytical method with fundamentalist religious belief. The pictures, unfortunately, to date, we have not been able to restore from the web. The original essay was available on the Brigham Young University website. However, when Jones was dismissed from his position at Brigham Young, that was taken down. I've been able to salvage the essay from cached elements on the internet, but in the actual pictures, I think it gives a clearer picture of the flaws in Jones' general analytical method. The particular deity or spirit that occupies much of the photographic part of that paper holds a sort of bowl-like ceremonial vessel in its hands. Some cases, the hands have a peg into which the holes in the bowl are fit. Some cases, the bowls have the holes and the hands have the pegs. Sometimes the bowls have the pegs and the hands have the holes. But Jones extrapolates from that and says these are wounds or made by nails or nails in the hands, and it's no such thing. They're not nails and they're not wounds. It isn't Jesus. It doesn't have anything to do with Christianity or even Europe. It indicates simply that pre-Columbian Central American civilizations had figured out, among other things, to fit a round peg in a round hole. I also should probably add that I'm inclined to doubt that Stephen Jones really believes what it is that he's saying. That's conjecture. We should note in this context that up until recently, by his own description, he was a strong supporter of George W. Bush until recently. But also note that his turf, so to speak, Brigham Young University and Utah, is also the home turf of one Karl Rove, who is implicated in certain aspects of the September 11th phenomenon. Specifically, Rove has documented connections to people involved with the September 11th money trail. And Rove's specialty is badjacketing, that is to say, discrediting a potentially damaging line of inquiry by floating fundamentally fallacious, although superficially attractive, pieces of information, initially to attract investigators and then to discredit the focal point of the investigation and repel subsequent and perhaps more effective investigations. Journalists are a little bit like birds, like flocks of birds. When one lands, they all land, and when one flies away, they all fly away. An example of sort of Rove methodology is what happened to Dan Rather in '60 Minutes. Floating information which will discredit a potentially damaging line of inquiry is called by the intelligence community badjacketing, and the Dan Rather debacle is a good example of what the type of thing that Rove does, whether or not he was directly involved in that. And one cannot help but wonder whether perhaps Stephen E. Jones of Utah and Karl Rove of Utah, both were up until recently strong supporters of George Bush, might actually be on the same page. That, however, is conjecture. Now, much of the broadcast, the present broadcast, is going to consist of the reading of a paper that was put together by Brent Blanchard of ProTech Documentation Services Incorporated. That is an engineering firm based in New Jersey that works with demolition companies and in particular works around the world with companies that specialize in explosive demolition. And I was waiting for something like this. Brent Blanchard also is the senior editor for ImplosionWorld.com. And that is a magazine that caters specifically, it's an industry magazine that caters to people in the demolition and explosive demolition industry. I was hoping that at some point someone with expertise in the field of controlled demolition or explosive demolition would weigh in on this particular debate. Happily, that has taken place. This essay is already available in the FTR Reading blogspot on the Spitfire website, one of the many features of the Spitfire website and linked websites, which can be of great services. And indeed, in the FTR Reading blogspot, there are a number of other URLs to click on to examine the flaws in this argument at great length and in great detail. This, however, this particular paper was again authored by the senior editor for Implosion World and the director of field operations for ProTech Documentation Services Incorporated. I'm going to read the entire paper into the record. However, since Some of this is relatively technical, and I think the authors and editors here have done a very good job of reducing some relatively complex technical discussion to a relatively simple syntax, which will be available, or accessible, I should say, to a wider variety of people than might be expected from such a technical document. Still, it's technical, so I'm going to excerpt a few key features of it. The paper was authored on August 8th of 2006. It is authored by Brent Blanchard, last name B-L-A-N-C-H-A-R-D. It's titled, A Critical Analysis of the Collapse of World Trade Center Towers 1, 2, and 7 from an Explosives and Conventional Demolition Industry Viewpoint. And I'm going to excerpt a portion of the purpose section of this paper. Purpose. The purpose of this analysis is to explore the possibility of explosives or similar supplemental catalysts causing or contributing to the collapse of World Trade Center Towers 1, 2, and 7 in New York on September 11, 2001, through examination of known facts as they relate to scientific principles of gravity, explosives, and structural failure. To our knowledge, this is the first analysis conducted by experts in the field of explosive demolition, as well as the first with observations and commentary from personnel directly responsible for the removal of debris from Ground Zero. The author then goes on to discuss some of the points they're not dealing with, having to do with the actual intellectual and political, or really the political connections involved with September 11th, and they make the point that they don't deal with who motives for doing this or that or the other aspects of September 11th and the very real questions that are there to be asked. What I'm going to do is to simply present the assertions and protests comments here, and then I'm going to go ahead and reread the entire paper in detail. The assertions they treat and the summary of their conclusions are as follows. Assertion number one that is examined, quote, the towers collapse look exactly like explosive demolitions, unquote. Protech comment, no, they didn't. It's the where, unquote. Assertion number two, but they fell straight down into their own footprint. Protech comment, they did not. They followed the path of least resistance, and there was a lot of resistance. And again, I'm going to read their detailed analyses of these assertions when I read the paper in its entirety, but simply by way of summarizing and synopsizing. Assertion number three, but explosive charges, a.k.a. plumes, squibs, etc., can clearly be seen shooting from several floors just prior to collapse, unquote. Protech comment, no, air and debris can be seen pushing violently outward, which is a natural and predictable effect of rapid structural collapse. Assertion number four, several credible eyewitnesses are adamant that they heard explosions in or near the towers, unquote. Protech comment, maybe they did hear loud noises that sounded to them like explosions, but such statements do nothing to refute scientific evidence that explosives were not used. Assertion number five. An explosive other than the conventional dynamite or RDX was used, a non-detonating compound such as thermite, a.k.a. thermate, which gets very hot upon initiation and can basically melt, unquote, steel. This can be proven by photographs of molten steel taken at Ground Zero, the temperature and duration of underground fires, and comments made by rescue workers, unquote. Protech comment, we have come across no evidence to support this claim. Assertion number six, debris removed from Ground Zero, particularly the large steel columns from Towers 1 and 2, were quickly shipped overseas to prevent independent examination or scrutiny, unquote. Protech comment, not according to those who handled the steel. Assertion number seven, World Trade Center 7 was intentionally pulled down with explosives. No airplane hit it, and the building owner himself was quoted as saying he made a decision to, quote, pull it, unquote. Protech comment, this scenario is extremely unlikely for many reasons. And then, assertion number eight, A steel-framed building has never collapsed due to fire, yet three steel buildings collapsed on one day, therefore explosives must have been responsible, unquote. Protech comment, no, it actually means three steel buildings collapsed due to fire and violent external forces on one day. And in that context, the authors note, the fact is that many steel structures have collapsed due to fire. The notion that that had never happened is simply an urban legend. It's not true. Assertion number nine. Anyone denying that explosives were used is intentionally ignoring or dismissing evidence that doesn't suit their conclusion, unquote. Protech comment? Please. If anyone knows of specific physical evidence relating to explosives being used in any manner on the Ground Zero site, bring it to our attention. And those are that is the synopsis of the various conclusions drawn here. And I'm going to reread the purpose in its entirety and also read the entire paper from front to back. And again, this is a very technical paper. Again, August 8, 2006, the paper by Brent Blanchard, A Critical Analysis of the Collapse of World Trade Center Towers 1, 2, and 7 from an Explosives and Conventional Demolition Industry Viewpoint. Purpose. The purpose of this analysis is to explore the possibility of explosives or similar supplemental catalysts causing or contributing to the collapse of World Trade Center Towers 1, 2, and 7 in New York on September 11, 2001, through examination of known facts as they relate to scientific principles of gravity, explosives, and structural failure. To our knowledge, this is the first analysis conducted by experts in the field of explosive demolition, as well as the first with observations and commentary from personnel directly responsible for the removal of debris from Ground Zero. Some topics that do not relate to such analysis and thus receive no practical consideration here include who owned the buildings, who insured the buildings, what types of documents were stored in the buildings, motives for destroying the buildings. The significance of the above points, among countless others, can be debated forever, but none relate to the specific actions required to execute a successful explosive demolition. Nor will we be rendering opinions on the NIST, FEMA, or 9/11 Commission reports, as they did not make specific comments regarding explosives. It is further acknowledged that many family members of World Trade Center victims have embraced and in some cases aligned with those who question the official version of events that occurred on September 11th. This report will not, nor is it intended to, address the much wider scope of unanswered questions regarding those events. Rather, this is a reasoned, factual analysis of a single group of questions and allegations that fall within our specific area of expertise. And to that end, we hope this report will be of benefit to all interested parties. About the authors. This report is authored by Brent Blanchard, Senior Editor for ImplosionWorld.com and Director of Field Operations at Protech Documentation Services, Incorporated, Ronkonkoms, New Jersey. Additional contributions and research assistance was provided by Protech employees Earl Gardner, Mary McGeever, Michael Golden, and John Golden. And then about Protech and its qualifications. Protech is one of the world's largest, Protech is one of the world's most knowledgeable independent authorities on explosive demolition, having performed engineering studies, structural analysis, vibration or air overpressure monitoring, and photographic services on well over 1,000 structure blasting events in more than 30 countries. These include the current world record holders for largest, tallest, and most buildings demolished with explosives. Protech regularly documents the work of more than 20 explosives contractors who perform structure blasting as a primary source of revenue, including extensive experience with every American company in that field, as well as dozens more who blast structures in a part-time capacity. Beyond the above, Protech possesses several additional types of data and experience that place the firm in a unique position to analyze and comment on this event. Protech was operating portable field seismographs at construction sites in Manhattan and Brooklyn on September 11th, and these seismographs were recording ground vibration throughout the time frame of events at Ground Zero. These measurements, when combined with more specific and detailed seismic data recorded by Columbia University's Lamont-Doherty Earth Observatory, help to provide an unfiltered, purely scientific view of each event. In the weeks following September 11th, several ProTech building inspectors and staff photographers, including this author, were contracted by demolition teams to document the deconstruction and debris removal processes at Ground Zero. These processes include the mechanical pull-down of the remains of U.S. Customs Building, World Trade Center 6, and various other activities occurring simultaneously throughout the site. Our teams took thousands of photographs and personally examined untold amounts of debris, including countless structural elements from World Trade Center 1 and 2. While these photographs and video recordings were not originally intended to specifically prove or disprove evidence of explosive demolition, they do provide substantial visual evidence that relates directly to this analysis and place us in a position to speak firsthand on conditions on the site rather than relying on outside testimony or hearsay. ProTech has been given access to thousands of personal photographs taken by laborers and site foremen employed by the demolition companies responsible for deconstructing the Ground Zero site. These companies include Tully Construction, D.H. Griffin Wrecking, Mazzacchi Wrecking, Yannuzzi Demolition, Gateway Demolition, and Manafort Brothers. Any other demolition company claiming to have worked on the Ground Zero site either worked under the supervision of one of these firms or is misrepresenting their participation. In addition, ProTech documented the only public discussion of the 9/11 cleanup attended by all of the demolition teams, National Demolition Association Convention, Orlando, Florida, 42203, while the original intent of ProTech's two-hour video was to archive the unprecedented challenges faced by these teams, various questions, and commentary from the speakers are relevant to this analysis. Because building implosions are often promoted as live news events, ProTech's offices are equipped to record multiple television broadcasts at all times. Our company's archived recordings of original news broadcasts from the morning of September 11th begin well prior to the collapse of the first tower and continue uninterrupted beyond the collapse of World Trade Center 7. These original, unedited recordings have allowed us to compare and scrutinize the collapse of all three structures free from any possibility of image tampering or modification. In addition, we have examined dozens of freelance and amateur video recordings incorporated into various documentary programs chronicling September 11th and studied countless ground-based and aerial images captured by private, press, and government-contracted photographers. ProTech and its employees have not been paid or hired by anyone to analyze this event, nor do we possess any political affiliations or contribute to any political party or individuals. We have undertaken this endeavor entirely at our own expense, with the singular goal of facilitating constructive dialogue and providing a factual voice of reason to our friends and associates who were affected by the attack. A final note. Before releasing this report, we reviewed every paragraph and tried to simplify the verbiage and technical vernacular as much as possible. Our thinking is that the more people who understand this analysis, the more benefit it might provide. It is given that each of the points below could and likely will be extrapolated upon in far greater detail by others. However, the intent here is to offer our comments as succinctly and cohesively as possible. Let me interrupt at this point to stress, too, that in addition to this analysis, at the aforementioned FTR Reading blog spot on the Spitfire website, there are other detailed analyses, some of them more detailed than this one, as well as a number of other URLs containing unedited transcript and testimony from first responders and so forth. There are also some aspects of the actual physical events of September 11th that are not discussed here. They do discuss what happened to World Trade Center 7, and they also discuss the extraordinarily unlikely possibility that Larry Silverstein, who owned that building, would have been in charge of any sort of demolition operation at World Trade Center 7. One of the things that the authors do not bring up in the context of World Trade Center 7, which we're going to deal with inside too, is the fact that the interview in question, where Larry Silverstein is heard to say, well, we might as well pull it, was being recorded for broadcast purposes, and he's talking with a New York City Fire Department official, and they were concluding that basically there was no way that the fire could be controlled, and so they decided to pull it. And the idea is not to blow up the building, but the idea is to pull the firefighters out of there before more loss of life could take place. Those who were pushing the controlled demolition hypothesis necessarily involve the controlled demolition, Larry Silverstein and others, with some sort of covert operation. And again, those remarks were recorded for broadcast purposes. The notion that someone who would be involved with a clandestine demolition of a building would say, well, we can't control the fire, I guess we better blow up the building, which is the inferred meaning of that phrase from those who are pushing this hypothesis, simply defies reality. If this were a covert operation, he's not going to discuss that in an interview being recorded for broadcast purposes. We're going to be reading the bulk of this paper in its entirety on side two. We're almost at the end of side one. I thought that I would read the last three paragraphs of the original analysis. There are some subsequent clarifications and corrections to the report. The authors conclude the main body of the report by saying, "With all due respect to distinguished scholars and others alike, it matters little whether Alex Jones is drawing parallels to building implosions, Stephen Jones is drawing conclusions from hot metal, or Chuck Jones is drawing dynamite in the hands of Wile E. Coyote. For assertions to be credible, they must eventually comply with the scientific principles of explosive initiation and of structural failure, realistic judgments of probability, and indisputable visual evidence. Thus far, every assertion we have investigated scores a resounding 0-3. Our team welcomes the opportunity to review additional data as it becomes available. However, barring any additional evidence, those making allegations similar to the points above may do well to consider that sometimes asking tough questions isn't the biggest challenge. It's accepting the answers and decisively moving on to other areas that render their contributions productive and valuable." Again, because we're almost done with this side of the broadcast, to access this paper, and I would strongly encourage people who are listening to this program to read this paper, and also the other materials not only available on the Spitfire website, but in particular on the FTR reading blog spot. There's a lot of very good information addressing in a calm and scientific manner the assertions of the controlled demolition advocates. And so please do take advantage of those. Take advantage of the rest of the Spitfire website as well. There's a tremendous amount of information that's available. It has a search function. At some point, we will get the Spitfire website reorganized to make it a little more user-friendly, but that is still somewhat off in the future. But there's a tremendous resource available to you. Please use it. And there's also a page on the Spitfire website to contribute to the work that I'm doing. And if you don't like what's going on, contributing to and supporting the work that I'm doing is one of the best ways to address that problem. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 599. Update on September 11th and related matters. This has been recorded on June 3rd of the year 2007. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.